Good afternoon and welcome to the Surgery Endorsement Maintenance Conference Call. And I'd like to now turn the call over to Melinda to go over the purpose and overview of today's call.
Thank you, Alexis. So as you see in the agenda, it's pretty straightforward. There are three pediatric congenital heart surgery volume measures that the group had been, two of which the group had been asked to review for another committee in terms of which one was best among the, or between the two as competing measures. And then there is a measure within this surgery phase two that's also been added to that to look at in terms of related and competing. So that'll be actually the first order of business. And then there are two measures from phase one that were carried over because of additional questions that the group had, and you have responses to those questions. The group will be able to review those, and then we'll go to phase two, measure follow-up, and these will be the measures about which you had asked for additional information. In addition to those, there are the two wound dehiscence measures, which the group had identified as not meeting the importance criteria, but as was noted at the meeting, that revolved around the question of evidence. After the meeting, additional information was provided to clarify some of the evidence information, and that is brought forward to the group for it to review today. And having heard that the people critical to respond to any questions you might have about that must leave at 4:15, what I propose that we do is review that information right after the phase one measure follow-up, and then go to phase two. We are anticipating, and we know this group is great, that we will not be able to cover all of the information on the agenda and are looking to the potential of a follow-up call to look at related and competing measures. So that's really what we're about today, and would turn the meeting over to the co-chairs, Dr. Torchiana and Dr. Morris.
Did you do the roll call already?
No, we just have identified people as they came on, so happy to do a roll call. Alexis or Jessica, would you do so? Hello?
And if you are speaking, you have an open line, please check your mute button.
Hi, it's Alexis. I'll run through the role of the committee. Dr. Nassim?
Yes, I'm here.
Dr. Barnaby? Dr. Carpenter? Dr. Seema? Dr. Collins?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Dr. Dillon? Dr. Dutton?
Here.
Mr. Finley? Dr. Grayling?
Here.
Dr. Halpern?
Present.
Ms. Kennedy? Dr. Kleinpel? Dr. Morris?
Here.
Dr. Morton? Mr. Rivenberg? Dr. Rogers?
I'm here.
Dr. Seigel? Dr. Sears?
Here.
Okay. Dr. Sipperenstein? He's actually out traveling, so he will not be attending the call. Dr. Stafford? Ms. Speed?
Here.
Dr. Torchiana?
I'm here.
Great. Dr. Will Hoyt?
I'm here.
Great. And Ms. Zambricki?
Here.
Great.
And in addition to the members of the committee who are on the call, there are also representatives from the developers who are available to provide any additional information you might desire today. So, Dr. Torchiana, Dr. Morris.
Mark, if I could just ask one question of our hosts. I'm not able to access the webinar page. Is it active for everyone else?
I can't access it either. This is Dr. Halperin.
I can access it if this is Nassim Aftar. It's just on the agenda, but I didn't have any problems accessing it.
Anyone else have problems? I've tried it twice and basically sign in and get a blank page.
This is Arden. I'm not actually using the webinar page. I'm just going with the Surgery Steering Committee June 21st call materials attachment that Alexis sent on June 15th.
Yeah, the webinar page is just showing, for me, is just showing the final agenda.
Okay, so I should look for Alexa's June 15th email instead.
I think it might be more useful. Alexis, do you have anything to add to that?
This is Jessica from NQF. Right now, the webinar should show just the final agenda since we haven't started discussing the documents yet. But you can also refer to Alexis's email from earlier with the attachment that was mentioned.
So, Alexis, I don't know if this is possible or not, but if you could resend that. I don't see that in my inbox. I might have moved it onto a computer desktop if it was a big file. I'll keep trying to access the webinar, but if it's possible to resend the materials, I'd appreciate it. My secretary told me there were over 500 pages, so I didn't print it.
This is Christine. I'm accessing the webinar page right now. I did not put anything in the location space and just put my name and email, and it pulled it right up. So I don't know if that is anything that's important.
Maybe I'll try that then. Thank you. So I'm sorry for that digression.
Could I ask a scheduling question?
Surely.
This is Jeff Silber. I'm going to be addressing, or I'm here to answer questions on the failure to rescue measures. Did I understand that there was a change in the schedule, or is there do we do plan on getting to that today, right?
It is our hope that we will be able to get through all of the phase two follow-up questions, of which those two measures are included. The only change that I suggested, and that is to the co-chairs to address, is providing information to the group about wound dehiscence evidence prior to going to those phase two follow-up questions, and that should be a relatively brief discussion. So,
stand by then. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Arden, just for simplicity, this is Dave Torchiana. If you would be so kind as to manage the agenda. All I have is the agenda. I don't have any of the materials as yet. So I will chime in as needed, but if you want to take the helm, that would
sure.
be great.
Okay, and David, I just forwarded you the email from Alexis. It is 597 pages, which is a lot of pages, but if you're on the page electronically, it's not quite as overwhelming.
Okay.
So the first item in the agenda is, first of all, welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining the call today and for your ongoing service to the committee. And also welcome to our measure developers. The first item is the pediatric and congenital heart surgery volume measures. We received a memo that provided further information about the three mortality measures, three volume measures. Linda, I'm going to need a little bit of help here.
So this, in the package of material that came to you, is the third item in the package. It says pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery measures. The measures to be considered today are the volume measures. If you look at that memorandum. It's highlighted on the first page, and then the actual display of the specifications are on page 7. Wait a minute.
I would recommend page 20 of the document.
Okay. So scrolling down to page 20.
So that's the layout of the volume measures, the specification, and I see them in the document that was sent out on page 16. So I don't know if as people pull them in, it reformats it.
It's page 20 if you're using the PDF pages, and if you're using the actual page of the memo, it's page 16.
Right, sorry.
Okay. This is Arden. I'm still struggling a little bit. What's the first question that we want to address, or the first thing that we need to talk about with regard to this as I continue to look for it?
The issue is, does the committee review those? Let me back up one step. The pediatric committee had recommended endorsement of the PCS 07-09 and 08-09 and were not able to suggest what were the best of the two. And then as we looked at the measures within this project, we added measure 0340 as an additional measure. When the surgery committee looked at the mortality measures on the 5th of May, and they are related measures in the sense that there is a mortality measure using the 5 mortality levels, as there is a volume measure using the 2. And the group determined that the mortality measure was a measure that was appropriate to advance as a measure separate from the other two, in that it could be stratified on 5 levels. So the similar one in this set of volume measures is PCS 008-09. And then in looking at the mortality ratio for heart surgery and the heart surgery mortality risk-adjusted measure, mortality measures, the committee recommended that they be harmonized into a single measure, and they would be reported as a risk-adjusted ratio. So then if you look at the companion measures in the companion volume measures, you're looking at those in potentially a similar fashion as the committee evaluated the mortality measures. But the question is, are the 3 measures indeed competing? If they are competing, which is the best? And if they are not competing, is there a compelling reason to advance 2 or more of them as endorsed measures?
You know, this is Christine. I'm trying to remember. Was this the discussion where we had on the phone the physician from Boston University, and she was talking about using a different acuity measure, or was that a different pediatric measure?
I think you mean at the in-person meeting there was a physician from Boston on the phone calling into the meeting?
Right.
Yeah, that was Kathy. She's from Boston Children's.
Right. Was that this measure that we were discussing?
I thought it was the mortality measure that we were discussing, but it could well have been both. I guess the point that I wanted to raise at some point during this call, which we discussed in a pre pre-call a couple days ago, is this notion of competing administrative and registry measures, rather than joining each one on its individual merits, it seems like it might be useful for this committee to look at this question more holistically. And there was a suggestion made that maybe we bring this discussion to the next call. But Arden and I think, volunteered to write a little page or two outlining the pros and cons of the various sides of this question. Because it seems to me, given that we had the discussion in one meeting, we had it three different times on three different topics, and that's just a guess as to exactly how many times we had it, but it seems to come up recurrently. I would have thought almost by definition, administrative measures and registry-based measures are almost by definition complementary, and that we should stop trying to identify which is better than the other and whether they're complementary or not, because given the fact that they come from different data sources and have different levels of availability, I think they're inevitably complementary in almost every circumstance. And that might save an awful lot of individual discussions.
I'll second that.
And I agree totally that they serve different purposes and are available to different parties. So I think they are different.
And this is Connie Steed. I concur.
So then the secondary question here is which of the two pediatric risk adjustment methodologies we think is more important?
Well, the question is, are they truly competing? And if they are competing, is there one that is better than the other one? Or is there a reason why there is both should be endorsed?
The steward for both of these measures appears to be the Society of Thoracic Surgeons. Do they have an opinion about which measure is more appropriate?
So on the call, we have a representative from STS. Jane, are you there? Is there someone with you?
I am here. Dr. Jacobs is on the line as well, but I think that he might have been put into the listening bucket for the call.
And if he could press star one, I can open his line.
Can you guys hear me now?
Mr. Jacobs, your line is open.
Yeah. Hi, this is Jeff Jacobs. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I'm the chair of the Society of Thoracic Surgeons Congenital Heart Surgery Database. I'm a pediatric heart surgeon in Florida. We had discussed at the face-to-face meetings rather extensively the different measures for mortality. And at that meeting, the way I understood that we left was that the plan would be to harmonize the AHRQ mortality measure and the Boston measure into one measure, since they were both using the same risk adjustment methodology in different versions, and that measure was going to be moved forward as a complementary measure to the STS mortality measure, which was the stratification into five levels. From what I understand now, the purpose of this call is to talk more about the volume measures and the mortality measures. Is that correct?
To talk specifically about the volume measures, that's correct.
Perfect. Okay. So from what I see here, there's three volume measures that are being put forward. One, that's the AHRQ measure using ICD-9 codes and administrative data, and then two that are partner measures, truly, using clinical data and the STS Congenital Heart Surgery Database clinical nomenclature. And the difference between the two is that one of the measures is a measurement to report overall cardiac surgical volume within a given institution, and the second is one that then takes that volume and stratifies it into five levels of operative complexity. And these two mortality measures, they're not really competitive, and it's not a matter of choosing one or the other. They're kind of partner measures that go together. I think Does that help?
Dr. Jacob, as you just expressed that, that all the information that's in the first measure is in the second measure also. It's just further broken down into five levels.
Right. So the first measure gives all your cases that are done within a given time frame at a given program. The second measure then stratifies those into five levels of complexity and will capture probably 97-98% of the operations done.
So we could get rid of the first measure.
Pardon me?
So we could get rid of the first measure because all that information is in the second measure.
That's not 100% true because some of the operations that are done don't fall into any of the complexity categories, probably 2 or 3% of the operations. And what the first measure does is it gives a measure of overall programmatic volume, and counting all the cases, even the ones that won't fit into the complexity stratification categories, and it provides basically a companion measure to the AHRQ measure, which is using ICD-9 codes, but this is using clinical codes. The last thing I would say about that is the reason STS put forward a clinical measure of overall volume is that the ICD-9 codes that capture overall volume have various amounts of non-specificities so that a number of operations that are really not pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery are captured in those ICD-9 codes just by the way those codes are set up. So we felt that although, as was said before on this conference call, the ICD-9 codes provide some complementary information, it's important to be able to get the overall programmatic volume of a program using clinical codes as well.
Okay. I agree with having administrative data and clinical data. That all makes sense. So the
right.
S measure we're definitely keeping. The two STS measures, though, if we added a sixth category of other or undeterminable to the second measure, we could get rid of the first measure, right?
If that would be another way to do it, it's not the way that I guess that's absolutely another way to do it. That's not the way we would. That's not the way we've reported our data for the last decade. But certainly, that's another way to look at it. It's to have another category for other, and then the sites could add them all up.
Well, if a goal of NQF is to avoid measure clutter, that would be my recommendation.
In Halpern, I also noticed that there's a slight difference between the volume measure of the AHRQ and STS in that yours seems to include patients who are not pediatric age but may be having congenital heart repairs.
Right, and when we put these measures forward, we put forward a set of measures that included the domain of pediatric and congenital heart surgery. The reason being that the majority of adult congenital heart surgery done in the country is operations that are done in congenital heart surgery programs rather than adult acquired heart surgery programs. For example, if you're a 45-year-old with tetralogy of Fallot, you're not going to have your surgery at a hospital that's doing hundreds of coronary artery bypass grafts. You're going to have the surgery done by a program that does congenital heart surgery. So all of the measures put forth by STS were to cover the domain of pediatric and congenital heart surgery because adult congenital heart surgery otherwise would not have a home. And as of the year 2000, there were more adult patients with congenital heart disease having surgery than children because these children are now starting to survive. Does that make sense?
Yes. And would you want then, in order to make the AHRQ measure more complementary to yours, to include that category of patients as well?
Yeah, I think it would be nice. The challenge is that the ICD-9 codes would not allow one to identify if a patient who was over the age of 18 was having congenital versus acquired heart surgery. In other words, the codes are not specific enough to differentiate those, whereas we're using clinical codes, one can differentiate. So I think it would be nice if we could do that with the AHRQ measure, but it's not really doable with the current set of ICD-9 codes. In other words, you know, if you have congenital pulmonary valve disease from tetralogy of Fallot or you have acquired pulmonary valve disease from endocarditis, you're going to end up having the same set of codes when you go to the operating room using ICD-9 codes.
So to my other committee members, would that be a reason to favor the STS measure?
You know, I think that there are advantages and disadvantages to both of these measures, and I think it's ultimately the reality is that they complement each other. They have strengths where the others have weaknesses, and I think that the degree to which it's important to consolidate the two STS codes, I'm not exactly sure what the level of the imperative is for that, but I do agree that the first volume measure could easily be folded into the second volume measure by simply including the other category. Whether that accomplishes much, I don't really know, but it does seem like the discussion that we had in Washington made it quite clear that the STS approach and the AHRQ approach were highly complementary, and that there was not a strong reason to eliminate one or the other, that each brought something to the table.
And that's really consistent with the position that STS has about these measures as well.
That's fine.
Thanks. This is Heidi Bosley. I just have a question. Just for the most part, we often see volume and mortality measures paired. And I think the way you all are headed, you potentially would have the ARC combined with the children's mortality and volume potentially paired, and I guess that's a question to the group. And then I think the other question would be, with these two separate volume and mortality measures from STS, is there a way to pair them, and is that where the steering committee would head? And tell me if my idea of a pair doesn't make sense to you, because it is our term that we use.
And Heidi, it's Melinda. ARC had agreed when it provided its feedback that these would be reported, that the pediatric heart surgery mortality and volume measures would be reported as a pair. And what I thought I was hearing the group say is that they would recommend combining the STS measures, which then we would look at in terms of its pairing with the STS mortality measure and retaining the ARC measure as a complementary measure that then could still remain paired with the mortality measure. Arden and Dr. Torchiana, does that capture what the group, or I should ask the whole group, does that capture your intent? Sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, it's going to be an ongoing issue for us as well, but I think that there's important stuff here that we don't want to lose.
And it seems like a reasonable compromise. You can maybe eliminate from the NQF standpoint one measure, and that doesn't preclude the STS from still capturing its own measures for its own purposes.
I concur.
So Arden, if that is the will of the group, the recommendation that will be included is a recommendation that that STS combine the two volume measures, and in doing so capture that small percentage of patients that are not currently captured in the 08 measure, and retain the ARC measure as a complementary measure.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jeff, is that something that your group can and would be willing to do?
Yeah, I would say I don't think we agree with that approach, but if that's the only option moving forward, it's something that we can do. It just doesn't seem right not to have a measure that reports the overall volume of a pediatric adult congenital heart surgery done by a program using clinical terminology. It seems to me like that should be done, and then they should be stratified into the complexity levels. So I guess the answer is yes, we would be willing to do it, but I think we would disagree with that approach, and we prefer to keep it as it was proposed and approved by the Pediatric Steering Committee a couple years ago.
David, do you have any other thoughts about it?
Well, again, to me, I'm not exactly sure what the imperative is to limit the number of measures. So I don't know what the imperative is to consolidate these two, if it's really a matter of just trying to contain the growth of NQF-endorsed measures. Obviously, anyone can do the arithmetic to add the five categories plus other gives you the total volume. But it does seem a little bit fruitless to force people into that exercise when you could also just have a partner measure that sums them up.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
Said better than I could say it. Thanks.
And what about other folks on the committee? I can't remember who it was that initially brought up the notion that we're trying to not have exorbitant growth of new numbers of measures.
People may be speaking with their mute button on, so if you're trying to talk, then have your mute button on.
Pardon, this is Terry. I've been following this conversation along. I'm not sure I understand all the details, but it seems to me that notwithstanding the notion of trying to reduce the number of overall measures, I would favor agreeing with and supporting the desires of the people who actually do this work and want to follow their their clinical results. Mm-hmm. So that's my vote.
So, Terry, are you voting for retaining both methods of getting at this, both clinical and admin?
Yes.
Does anybody feel a strong objection to that we should discuss further? I really agree with that as well.
This is Nassim Afsa. I agree with that as well. I think it's comprehensive to approach it.
I concur with that as well.
Okay. Anybody else for the county?
I guess what I'm struggling with then is why are we having measure harmonization discussions? And maybe NQF hasn't made the case well enough as to why we would need to harmonize or reduce the number of measures.
I guess another issue that's wide open is how are measures supposed to be harmonized when they're coming from different sources?
Well, this is Jeff Jacobs. What I could add to this discussion is that when we had our face-to-face meeting, we did end up harmonizing one of the measures, which was the AHRQ and Boston mortality measure, because they were both using similar but not identical methodology. Mm-hmm. So I would think that this whole exercise has led to a very positive harmonization in that sense, but also the realization that complementary clinical and administrative data is appropriate.
This is Heidi, just to address some of the questions on harmonization. We really are looking for parsimony in the sets of measures that come forward. But I guess in this is I'm struggling with the question myself is, if when you go to the point of publicly reporting this information, is it most useful to report it in two different rates, which we have here, versus one rate that's stratified? And that to me is, I think, the question that you all should grapple with perhaps. And if it makes the most sense to have two measures, then that's fine. That's your recommendation. If it makes sense to have one, then I think we can talk further with STS and determine what makes the most sense and if it is feasible for them. But ultimately, if it makes the most sense to have two, that's fine. Because they are harmonized because they're from the same developer. They capture the same information. So in that way, again, that I would consider harmonized. It's, what you're talking about is probably more parsimony, And that I think you all need to determine what makes the most sense.
Yeah, I can comment on how we envision this being used for public reporting because I do chair the public reporting task force for STS. And I was very involved in the development of our public reporting of coronary artery bypass grafting. And it would seem to me that it would be very easy on a very similar website to the one that we use to publicly report CABGs to publicly report a table where the first column is the name of the program or the name of the participants in the database or the name of the surgical group, and then you have a column for overall volume and then a column for volume in category 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then similarly, you have the mortality data from what we talked about with the mortality measures. Now, it's true that you could eliminate that overall volume and force the people going to the website to add it all up on their own. But it seems to me just putting overall volume and then the volume for the five categories and then the associated mortalities is a very easy way to publicly report this information. And that's certainly our intent is once these get approved, to rapidly publicly report them.
So, Dr. Jacobs, it's Melinda Murphy. Could you, in the single measure, report overall volume and then as well report the five as opposed to having people have to add it all up?
So if you're saying instead of having two measures, say that the measures should be reporting of programmatic volume and volume stratified by the five categories, I think that would be a reasonable but to two measures, one measure. And if you if that would be something we'd be very comfortable doing, just rewording the two measures into one, say that the measure is reporting of overall programmatic mortality and mortality stratified by the five categories. I'm sorry, volume stratified by the five categories. And that would eliminate an extra measure but retain all the information we think is important, and that would be, you know, very, very suitable and designed for public reporting rapidly.
So let's do that. It seems like we've spent a lot of time on a topic where we're in unanimous agreement that we want to keep all this information together, and that seems like a very simple, clean way of doing it, just put them into one measure.
I agree. I think that's a very nice compromise, and I'll work with Jane Hahn, who's on the phone from STS, and we'll resubmit these two measures as one measure that includes all the information in the two measures, just saying overall volume and volume stratified by the five categories. I think that's a very nice compromise, and then it kind of gets what everybody wants here.
Mm-hmm. So, can we move on?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll sign off here. Thank you,
Dr. Jacobs.
So, our next step is to go to phase one measures. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Phase one measures follow-up, and we're only 23 minutes behind. And we were going to review measures 134 and measure 300.
Okay. And did we want to do the dehiscence measures first, or do we want to do the phase one measures first?
Did we discuss that we were going to move to the dehiscence measures first?
I thought we could finish up the two from phase one, and then because the dehiscence measures were in phase two, that we could do those just before we started the remainder. But certainly it won't disrupt anything regardless of which way you want to proceed.
Okay. So for the phase one measures, I'm continuing to struggle a little bit. Are all of you guys looking at a slideshow?
I believe these start on page 37 is the first of the two, and it's the highlighted area that we're interested in. That's the new material added.
Okay.
I'm sorry, PDF page 37.
I have page 1 right after page 152 in my desk. And our follow-up included what?
In the shaded area, you see the questions that went back to the developer. And
I guess I'm struggling a little bit electronically here. So looking at phase one, I'm not really seeing a shaded measure, so that's a little tougher. I mean, sorry, shaded area.
Okay, so there were two questions. One was...
The American College of Cardiology Foundation is an essential part of translating science.
I'm sorry, someone has their phone on hold. That's... Operator, can you help with that?
For now on, I will ask for...
Linda, I can still hear you. I'm getting others can too.
Okay, so in looking at 134.
And then can I just send to the link or did you originally?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Your lines are open. Please go ahead. Once again, if not speaking, please use your mute button to reduce background noise.
Okay, so the question went back to SDS to look at 134 and provide some additional information about 134, and also the group was looking at measure 516 in terms of whether or not the harmonization of the two could occur by actually combining the measures into one, which would result in retiring, and the recommendation was that that occur, and the response, which is in the shaded box that you see there, in terms of harmonization, the developer agreed to harmonize the two measures, 134 and 516, by combining them into a single measure. And the difference was one was reported at a provider level and one at an institution level. So in combining them, they now will be able to report the information from one measure at both the provider and the institution level. So it is to the committee now to determine whether or not the response to the questions, including the harmonization question, addresses what they have asked for appropriately.
I guess, Alyssa, I'd say I'm with Arden in that when I look on the PDF document, I don't see anything.
It's in the olive green shading.
I haven't seen any olive green at all. Sorry
about
that.
So I'm going to where it says Phase 1, Measure 134.
Yes, that's where I'm going to.
Near the top of the PDF, and it doesn't have any of those questions that you outlined.
So where maybe the easiest place for you to go is look at the fourth item in the set of materials that says Table of Committee Suggested Modifications and Responses from Developers.
Will do.
Yeah.
And then there's a table of contents, and if you click on Measure 134, it'll take you right to that table.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is Nasima Afsar. In reviewing what we had suggested and the response, I guess four or five items, like all of them have been appropriately addressed. So from my standpoint, I don't think that would hold up the measure.
Okay. Yes. So under developer response, yeah, it sounds to me as well like everything has been addressed. Is there anything else that the group would like to discuss with relation to this?
This is Terry. I agree that they've been addressed.
Okay. So you can move on then, and what we will record is that the committee has determined that the issues have been addressed and that measure 0134 will continue and 0516 will be retired in that it has now become a part of 0134.
Okay.
Good.
And then the next one is the cardiac patients with controlled 6 a.m. Glucose.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some changes that were made as a result of the phase one review of the measure. And then at the time of the meeting in May, there were some additional questions that were asked of the developer. And again, those are in that shaded area of the discussion of measure 0300. So the questions were related to the numerator. If the glucose is above 180 milligrams per deciliter, was it decreased within a specified amount of time, and what additional testing would be completed in light of the modification? And the developer has responded to those questions.
And they also changed the time frame appropriately.
Yes. And the measure title was also changed.
Okay.
This is Terry. Looks good to me.
Looks good to me as well.
All right. Anybody object? Anybody want to say anything else to counter? All right, great. Is it time for us to move on then to the dehiscence measures?
Yes.
Okay.
And with Arden, with respect to the dehiscence measures, you'll recall that at the meeting there was some discussion about the evidence that was included in the within the measure documentation, and following the call and following the vote, actually, of the committee, there was additional information that came forward from ARC to speak to the question of the evidence, and that went out to the committee yesterday afternoon about 4:54 p.m. that just summarized the information related to that. So does everyone have, recall that or have copies of it? If not, I can read through it.
Wasn't it also sent previously?
Yes.
Okay. I remember seeing it previously, but not yesterday afternoon.
Yes, it was sent directly from Dr. Romano, I believe.
Yes. Okay. Did anybody who didn't receive that either previously or yesterday?
Which measures are these? So we can look at this.
The measure was one that was 0368 postoperative wound dehiscence, and it's not in the documentation that you have in the materials that went out on the 15th. And the reason that it is not in there is because at the time of the committee vote, both the measure, this measure, the PSI 14, and the companion pediatric measure were voted down on importance based on concerns that the evidence that had been brought forward was misquoted, misapplied. So after receiving the additional information, it seemed appropriate that the committee had the opportunity to see the information that Dr. Romano provided, and this was the first opportunity that the committees had to do that as a collective.
I think that this might wind up being a little bit confusing since it's not in the materials that were previously sent out in the anticipation of this meeting. I completely agree with revisiting these measures since I think that it's possible that the evidence, that as a committee, that we misunderstood the evidence, and Dr. Romano has kindly continued to help to clarify that. So I do think that it's absolutely justifiable to revisit these measures, but I'm concerned that right now in our telephone discussion, which is a little bit more chaotic than some of our previous discussions, I'm concerned that we will not be able to do the topic justice.
And I'm not seeing the thing that I got yesterday was a summary of the prior meeting, so I'm not actually seeing where exactly the additional information is.
So you got a summary of the prior meeting, and the additional information is not incorporated in there. It was in an email message that came that had previously been sent by Dr. Romano and then was resent on yesterday by NQS staff. So appreciating, Dr. Morris, what you've just said, let's table that one and let's bring it back for our next call, which we would anticipate at this point being related and competing measures, and put this on at the top of the call.
I think that that sounds good. Dr. Romano, if you're on the line, I apologize that we keep kind of deferring this, but we want to treat the measure fairly.
That's quite all right.
I am not even seeing it, though. Yeah, I'm having the same problem, Vivian.
Yeah. It's on there,
okay, so Dr. Morris, then do you want to move on into the phase two measure follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see now. So we're looking at the first measure, looks like it's 284, correct?
Correct. And if you're looking at that table of suggested modification and responses, again, the questions and the response will be in the shaded area.
Yes. Okay. Now that's clear to me with the directions that you gave before. Those were very helpful. So for 284, surgery patients on beta blocker therapy prior to admission who received a beta blocker during the perioperative period. Everybody on that page or at that location?
What page within the document is it?
It's page 6.
It's the PDF. It's page 40.
Okay.
But on the that section, it's page 5 and 6.
Let's see now. So we had a problem with the dosing, which
yes.
The measure developer could not really address, it sounds like. And that's an issue because we don't want to simply jump through a hoop. We want it to be meaningful. If it's impossible to address this with the data that's available, then it's impossible to address this. What is anybody in vascular cardiac reading this?
Okay.
What are your
yes.
thoughts?
Yes, tell me it was 100 or 103.
Trying to read this.
Our question was whether the patient was actually taking the beta blocker prior to arrival.
Yeah.
It looks like they have suggested some further interrogation of the chart to try and determine that. But I think fundamentally that's going to be a difficult question.
The other thing, and I think I may have been the one that raised the question, the way it's worded, does it mean that you were on a beta blocker yesterday or a week ago or a month ago or a year ago?
Right.
And that's the part that really concerns me is that, you know, there's a big difference between yesterday and a year ago.
Yeah.
Or even 2 or 3 weeks prior, as is needed for vascular surgery.
Yeah, I really don't feel like completely addressed. Here.
Do we want to ask, is our measure developer on the line?
Hi, this is Ruth Kleintel. I'm just signing in now.
Okay. Hi, Ruth. We're looking at measure 284.
Okay.
In the materials that I believe Alexis sent out on June 15th, this was a zip file attached.
Sure.
So is there a representative from CMS who can speak to the question related to measure 284, surgery patients on beta blocker prior to admission?
So this is Dale Bransler. I'm not sure I understand what the question is.
Hi, Dale. So the question is around the definition of prior to arrival. And the issue for the committee is that it's unclear about what that means, whether it means that prior to arrival could be yesterday or it could have been a year ago. So more precisely, what does prior to arrival mean?
I think it's because, you know, in recent data, you can't just start beta blockers the day before and expect to have an improved outcome. In fact, it may increase complication rates rather than having it start. I think the current thing is about 2 weeks beforehand. So
we understand that. So the purpose is to try to identify patients who take the medication as a matter of routine. And if they take it at home, then the performance measure denominator only includes patients who are taking a beta blocker at home. And the notes for abstraction specifically state that if it was taken daily at home or the current medication to select yes, they're in the denominator. And then we look to see whether or not they're continued on beta blocker during the hospital stay. What we're trying to avoid is patients who do not take them on a daily basis, who take them only intermittently.
How is that being determined, I think, is what we were unclear on.
So it's a chart abstracted data element. It's found from the history and the medical record, since that's all we have access to.
And if the medical record says that I took the medication daily up until 2 weeks ago, I took it daily up until 1 week ago, it seems like there's a lot of room for interpretation,
right,
because
now,
there's nothing
now
about the time frame that the measure is referring to.
So if it's taken PRN, if they've been instructed.
Not PRN. Took it every day.
I understand.
But I stopped it a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. You know, if I stopped it a year ago, I did take it prior to arrival. Not right up until arrival, but the word prior to arrival is pretty vague as to time frame.
Okay, and now, Bill, let me answer the question. If the patient has been instructed to stop, then you're instructed to answer no to the data element. There's a long list of notes for abstraction for the data for this particular data element. So it has to be a current medication, a daily medication at home that's current, not something they've done in the past. And if it's been stopped, then the abstractor is specifically instructed to answer no. This measure has actually been in use now for a number of years. Of course, the majority of surgical patients are not chronically taking beta blockers, so the exclusion rate from the measure is around 80%, as I recall, 80 to 85% of the patients aren't chronically on beta blockers. And there's been steady improvement in performance.
Vivian, is there anything that you would suggest adding to make it more to...
No, I mean, what he said is, you know, makes sense to me. It doesn't sound to me like there's going to be a way that they can easily get how long exactly the patients have been on pre-op, unless there was some kind of pharmacy data that they can get their hands on, but, you know, for like people who've had prescriptions, but, and coordinate that with the, chart.
Mm-hmm. Which is fairly labor intensive at this
point. Yes. So I think it's as good as it gets.
All right.
Considering the limitation of doing this kind of data collection.
Does anybody else on the committee have any concerns about this or any thoughts about the developer response?
I feel like the wording should be, you know, more specific than prior to arrival, that it should say, you know, within 48 hours of arrival, within 1 week of arrival. You know, I think it should be very clear to anybody who reads it what's meant.
But I can tell you that once you start putting time frames in, remember this is based on somebody retrospectively, most commonly, abstracting the medical record. And once you start asking them to find documentation of how long the patient's been on the beta blocker, then it becomes extremely difficult. So the way we set it up, it has to be listed as a current daily home medication, daily. If it's taken on an intermittent basis, anything other than daily, they're instructed to answer no.
Well, how about adding words like current and daily?
Well, that's in the data element. It's in all of the notes for abstraction already.
But it's not in the numerator, or it's not in the denominator description.
You show me the denominator. Well, you have to know.
I mean, in the end, that is kind of, I understand your point, but it's sort of a little bit of semantics if they're already doing it on a practical level.
It's in the data element instructions. She's pulling up the denominator for me. That's in front of me.
And I guess what concerns me is that the measure should be something that somebody can read and understand. And even if it's in the abstractor's guidelines, that isn't necessarily readily accessible to somebody who's reading it and trying to understand what the measure involves. And somebody who might want to use it wouldn't necessarily have all of that fine print. And that seems like pretty basic information.
So it would be easy in the denominator statement to change it to something like all surgery patients on daily beta blocker therapy prior to arrival.
Well, that would make more sense then.
Throw in the word data.
I concur with that. That really helps a lot.
Yeah, it certainly is a clarifier, no question.
How about chronic daily beta blockade?
Yeah, I guess the only then, you know, again, we're trying to...
That may not capture people who got put on it like 2 weeks before.
Right. I mean, how do you define chronic?
Yeah. And from a nursing perspective, what we're writing down basically is date and last dose and time. So an abstraction, that would be an abstraction nightmare. Yeah.
From the nursing perspective, would daily?
It would.
Okay. So let's make that request.
Make that note, and we'll include it in the change request.
Okay. Are there any other changes that the committee would like to request with regard to this measure? Okay. Let's move on. Let's see now. Next is 365. Is that right, Melinda?
Correct.
I think it's the two pancreatitis ones, and it looks like all of our suggestions for these two measures were adopted, with the exception of what to do with transfers out. At the moment, if you do a pancreas operation and then transfer the patient to another acute care facility, they disappear from both the denominator and the numerator, which seems like a good way to make your complications go away. I understand the developer's concern with trying to include patients who are transferred out and the headaches that causes, and I'd ask if there is another suggestion for solving that problem.
This is Jeff Geppert from HRQ. So one of the things we wanted to suggest is that we do some further developmental work looking at the potential use of linked inpatient data. So we can sort of consider this question with a little more information about what happens to these cases and what they look like. ARPA has been developing with its HCA partners some files that allow for the linking across inpatient stays. And so it's a very small number of people, probably less than 1% of the denominator. So either way, it's not going to have a large impact on the measure. So I don't want to, you don't need to spend a lot of time probably considering it one way or the other. But that's another suggestion is that we look at using these linked files and see what the data show.
Actually, that would be a satisfying response for me if you tell me that in the data previously collected,
the transfers are an inconsequentially small number, then I agree, we shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very small number of patients.
This is Dr. Romano. Yes, I mean, I think what you have to keep in mind from the clinical context is that generally the hospitals that perform these major pancreatic resection procedures are prepared to deal with the complications, and so they really don't dump the patients on other hospitals when they have complications. They keep them and they deal with those complications. So I think that's what that's reflecting. And in fact, some of the transfers that we do see look like they're patients who are actually being back transferred to perhaps a closer to home facility where they can receive some further care before discharge. So it's a transfer of convenience for the patient rather than because the patient's about to die.
Right, so the sort of transfer that should happen. The other thing that I was thinking is that in a hospital that doesn't normally do a pancreas operation, it could be some situation where the patient is essentially in extremis and they're kind of trying to perform a bailout maneuver before transferring them to the more definitive hospital, say in the case of a trauma.
This is Dr. Romano again. Could I ask one question just to clarify the intent of the committee? Because we were a bit uncertain about the committee, I think, had recommended an exclusion for pancreatitis patients. And I just wanted to clarify whether you were thinking of the acute pancreatitis patients who may be having an acute necrotic process, or are you also including chronic pancreatitis patients who may be having a resection as part of pain management or other procedure for chronic pancreatitis?
I think it was very much the acute pancreatitis. That would be my interpretation.
Is Renee Stafford on the line? I think she might have been the one who brought this up initially.
I think it was her.
And that was my interpretation from the discussion. I just wanted to clarify that with the committee. That was the committee's intent as well.
Yeah.
So we'll clarify that in the documents.
All right. Anything else on this measure? We go ahead and move on. The next measure is 366, pancreatic resection volume. Want more feedback about the denominator? And then we had asked for the developer to stratify by malignant and benign disease and harmonize with the previous measure. And you clarified it's not just for cancer.
Looks like they answered our questions.
Yeah, I agree. I'm satisfied with that. Is there anything that the committee would like to discuss? Okay. And then the text was going to be amended or corrected to be appropriate for pancreatic rather than esophageal. Okay, so let's move on to measure 265, hospital transfer admission. And this was with the ASCs.
Yes.
Let's see. And who spearheaded the discussion of the ASC measures in our group?
I don't have that right.
website and I figure if I can get it.
I think that whoever it was is not on the line.
I'm sorry. I just remember the ASC people being there, but I'm trying to remember who it was.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Let's see now. So we had a little bit of a conflict here because as the ASC people described it, this area is sort of the Wild West. There is virtually no data. There are many, many ASCs, and the number is increasing. But we don't know what's going on there.
Well, the good news is that ASCs are in great shape compared to pain clinics. I think we had some questions for them about what they were reporting and sort of some discrepancies in their data, and it looks like they've answered all of that okay. We had a substantive suggestion to them that they shouldn't look at immediate transfers to a hospital but include the whole period for 24 hours after care. And it looks to me like they've agreed to change the measure to reflect that.
Hey, I read it. They haven't agreed to that. I thought.
Yeah, me too. I think they said they couldn't do that logistically.
Looks like they wanted to have a separate measure about that.
But a separate measure. Okay, I see. Yeah.
And Arden, it was Carol Wilhoit who led the discussion.
Oh, yeah.
I am here. I guess I forgot that I had led this.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure you were there.
Okay. I am here.
I think we're all just taking a moment to review the responses.
Oh, it's moving.
This, my overarching perception here is that this is very important, and it's going to become increasingly important, but it's really underdeveloped right now.
Yeah.
It sounds like what they're saying is if we have a measure that looks at hospital admission in a broader sense, that people will do a workaround and send people home and then not have to report it as a hospital admission.
Actually, they said something, I saw something about the opposite, that they felt that the malpractice risk, it's in the developer response number 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm reading that, too. That's how I was interpreting 3.
Yeah, it says the malpractice risk from social standard care has much graver consequences than potential outcome from a slightly higher transfer rate. So I think they are trying to say that
there would be more incentive to transfer than to inappropriately discharge home.
Yes, exactly.
I just, you know, I have trouble understanding how the measure ends up being useful because rates are really low, from 0 to 2%. And, you know, if you have 1 or 2% variation in terms of people who are admitted within, say, 24 hours, you know, you've just very quickly overwhelmed any difference from your original measure. So I don't know how you would interpret the results or what the value would be in the results of the measure in terms of direct transfers. You know, if you're trying to compare ASCs, well, different ones would probably do different kinds of procedures, have different underlying rates. You know, does it end up being useful?
Well, I think part of their, I don't know if the developers are on the phone, but I think part of their just off from what I remember of our conversations was that they don't have all the ASCs reporting, and they'd like this to be a performance measure so they can sort of encourage more of the ASCs to report to really get the true transfer rate, because all the people who report to them now are people who have elected to self-report, and therefore you could interpret as being sort of higher, you know, better run ASCs.
Right. And yet it's a lot of burden to start collecting the data. And if you don't know what the results mean when you're done, is it worth the effort?
So the issue here is that the group is sort of put it forth that they're thinking about creating a measure here to be requested to be endorsed by the NQS as a strategy for getting the ASCs all on board and providing and belonging to a registry and elevating their level of care from a point where they don't know what it is. I'm not sure if that's the right rule for NQF endorsement. I guess I'd really look to Melinda and potentially Helen to clarify that.
This is Kim Wood with the ASC Quality Collaboration. If I might just say a few words, if now would be appropriate time.
Sure.
We, as you appropriately mentioned, have very little data available about the performance within our industry, and we think that one of the things that we seek to provide to patients is some information about how often the ambulatory surgery center delivers on one of the fundamental expectations of the patient, and that is that they will return home after their procedure and not require either a transfer or a hospital admission. We think that's very important from the patient perspective and also very important from the ASC perspective. It provides a great deal of insight into how appropriate the patient selection is at that particular facility. You also mentioned, as you were discussing the measure, that the data that we have is only from a self-selected subpopulation of ASCs, and that is very true at this point in time, because we don't have a formal quality reporting system as is present in other provider types. So we have no way of knowing whether this low rate is something that would be consistently seen across the industry. And we do see value in developing this information and providing it for public reporting purposes.
I guess,
Mike, go ahead, Kirk.
Oh, just in response to Arden's question also, it doesn't seem to me to be an inappropriate use of NQF certification to encourage coalescence around a quality goal in an area that is heretofore sort of, somebody said, the Wild West. I don't see that as a bad thing, but I would be interested in Melissa's view on that.
It's Melinda.
Melinda, excuse me.
No, that's fine. The NQF endorses measures for quality improvement and public reporting. So those are the purposes. If in looking at this particular measure, the response of the developer to say to modify the numerator statement as has been requested, if that meets what the committee identifies as an appropriate quality improvement public reporting bit of information to relay admissions within a 24-hour period, then that would be consistent with the NQF QI and public reporting piece. But NQF doesn't go about the business of endorsing measures to encourage people to do things other than to address improving quality.
I believe that the 24-hour mark would be better and will better serve the public purpose of the measure. I think the counterbalancing force is that data impossible to get? Would the developer like to speak to that?
This is Kim Wood, and I'll speak to that. The reason that we specify the measure the way that we did, i.e. transfer admission upon discharge, is because we can be assured of very high reliability when we look at that cutoff. We are not certain how reliable the data would be if we went beyond the point of discharge, be it 24, 48, whatever number of hours the committee would like to settle upon and recommend. And that is why we felt as though perhaps the best way to address this would be to develop another measure. Go ahead and test it and see how reliable the information is if we look at an extended time period, because obviously there is a challenge to the facility to have to try and track down a patient once they've left the facility's care.
But don't most ACSs do a 24-hour phone call anyway to see how the patient is doing?
Many do, but not all. And if, for example, the ASC makes a call to the patient and they're not able to speak to them directly, they'll often say something to the effect of, you know, if you would like to call us back and let us know how you're doing, or something that leaves it open-ended on the patient's side as to whether or not there is reinitiation or closure of that loop of communication. And that also is a little bit of a tricky area.
I get it, like when you're leaving a voicemail for somebody.
Right. You leave them a voicemail, but you can't be assured of actually contacting them and getting the information that you want, even if you are making that call at a specified post-op interval.
Well, I would be okay with the approach you just outlined of starting to look for our car keys where the light is good and then developing the measure to look for them where we actually think they are down the road. I would be all right with that.
And we would be happy to develop that measure and give you data so that you can, with us, determine how reliable that information is and whether it is useful for patients as part of a public reporting process.
And it's Melinda. What the group in that circumstance would be doing is making determinations about the measure you have before you, and then should an additional measure come forward at a later point, it could come forward to NQF for endorsement separately. But given the discussion that's just occurred, what you would be voting on is the measure before you without that caveat.
Right. So this is Terry, and I agree that we should approve. I think the tenor of the conversation, as I recall, when we were in Washington, was that although this may not be perfect, it's a wonderful start at a area of clinical medicine that has been not particularly well looked at, and we wanted to encourage this kind of work. So, as I say, it may not be perfect, but it's awfully good, and I think that we should support it. That's my vote.
I concur.
Agreed.
I agree.
I concur as well.
If we do vote for this one, my recommendation is that we recommend it for time-limited endorsement so that it, you know, is only endorsed for a certain time period, and that allows a specific opportunity to take a look. Is that an option?
I don't know if that's an option. Is it, Melinda?
Well, we've got to go back and take a look at that, because this is a currently endorsed measure, and it's not time limited, and that would, and to take a measure that's currently endorsed without making any changes to it to make it time-limited, I do not believe would work at all.
This is a new this is an existing measure?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so much for the time limit. It seems to me that there's enough energy and commitment on the part of the professionals in the ASC environment that they're going to keep working with us in any case. So I think we can count on them to do that.
So, Dr. Morris, if the discussion is satisfied, everyone should know that voting will occur by SurveyMonkey following the meeting. So we are not recording any votes today. The question today is whether or not the responses have satisfied the committee.
Okay. And it sounds like they have mostly satisfied the committee, so I think that we should move on and go ahead and vote later.
Sounds good.
Okay, so the next one is 1519,
statin therapy at discharge after lower extremity bypass. And if you're looking at the electronic version, it's page 48 of 597, where the questions and comments are.
Okay.
Looks like they answered our question. Next.
Okay. Yeah.
That was short.
Vivian, anything about this that you'd like to discuss before?
No, I think that answers our questions.
Okay, yeah, it was pretty short, actually.
So, Dr. Morris, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
In the developer response, it says these are proposed for reporting every 12 months. So the question is that what they're changing the measure to say it will be 12 months for hospitals and less?
Well, actually, that's a question because it sounds like what they're saying is to include surgeons with lower volume. They recommended annual reporting of the last 50.
The 12 month was for hospitals, and then
for surgeons the
it was 50 consecutive procedures, which might be more than a year. There was by number of procedures,
mm-hmm.
because there's not that many lower extremity bypasses being done.
Right. So can we understand this to mean it's not that this is what's proposed, but in fact this is what the measure specification will include.
I believe that's the implication. Is anybody from the SVS on?
Yes, Jack Cronowitz. Yes, that's proposed was the that it should be that is the measure.
Okay, thank you. So then, Dr. Morse, if you're ready to move on,
mm-hmm, yep.
The next one is 357.
Okay.
This is a measure that at the committee meeting did not pass the importance criterion, but it did not pass by a single vote, and there were additional questions. So the questions and responses to those questions are on page 49 of 597.
Well, it sounds like it's in development still.
Well, I think that was just for the question up on this one was just reporting volume alone as opposed to volume with mortality for this one. I think that was our discussion, that it should never be reported alone was what I thought the majority of us kind of felt. And then the additional question, which has to do with the next measure as well, was separating out ruptures and open versus endovascular because they are very different. So the question is, because all they answered really was the issue of endovascular versus open, that they agreed to stratify from that. But I think the importance issue was whether volume alone should be reported.
Yeah, and let's see here. I want to review the measure in its entirety and provide additional information regarding the value of a paired measure with mortality.
Is there a separate measure just for mortality?
Yes, it has
yes.
a second one. That's the one right after it. It's the 0359, which is the one right after.
Okay.
So here, in their response, they didn't really say anything about that.
This is the volume of the facility. Is that correct? Not the volume of the surgeon.
I think it might be both.
Oh, I thought it was facility.
Is anybody from ARC still on?
Are you referring to the, this is Jack Romano, are you referring to the abdominal aortic aneurysm, resection, mortality, and volume?
Yes, the 0357 and 0359.
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't have the full 500 page document that you're referring to, but yes, those are specifically suggested by AHRQ as paired measures for volume and mortality. So that is part of the current structure. I'm not sure if it's part of the current NQF endorsement or not.
I do believe when they were originally endorsed, the recommendation that went into the report is that they always be reported as a pair.
Yeah, and this is John Bott with ARC. I think when we submitted them for maintenance, we noted they were their measures on their both respective maintenance forms.
Yeah, so we would stand by that recommendation, but we do note that some users may not have access to full volume data because they maybe only have data from a single payer, a single health plan or Medicare, for example. And so then the volume numbers would either have to be adjusted upward or they would not be valid. So that's a separate question that we don't specifically address in ARC's guidance.
And then there was the issue of separating out the, it appears that for the next measure, the mortality measure, you did agree to separate out ruptures as well as the endovascular versus open, but not for the volume measure. So I was just curious as to why the difference.
And I don't think there was a, this is Jeff again, I don't think our intention was that there was a difference. I think we were trying to be consistent, so
okay.
We can clarify that.
So it's Melinda. This is a question for ARC. Whenever you indicate that there will be additional methodological development required, that suggests that the measure then would not be ready to move forward for endorsement until that work was done, or I should say for continued endorsement. So can you speak to that?
Well, what that specifically refers to is just the need. So we have one measure, and now we're breaking it into four separate measures. The main rationale, or one of the main rationales for combining the measures initially was to try to improve the reliability by having a larger sample size. What we would need to do instead of that is use kind of a multivariate estimation framework like what STS uses for their cardiac mortality outcome measures, basically where you're borrowing statistical strength from each one of the measures but still reporting them separately. So that's all that really refers to, that we would have to implement that kind of estimation approach.
And
we could do that, and we could present, you know, data on that to the committee before a final decision is made. That would be fine, too. It just takes a little bit more time to conduct that analysis.
I'm sorry to press about that, but can you give a sense of what amount of time that would take so we know at what point it could come back to the committee? I'm just thinking about integrating it with the rest of the committee's work.
Yeah, I think we could provide that type of instrument probably within a few weeks, by the middle of July, something like that.
Okay. So then they could have that back by a future conference call.
That sounds
great.
Like,
thank you.
That these measures are now on hold. Okay.
This is Tim Kreswick. Am I unmuted properly here?
Yes.
So I think the other, because I'm speaking from the Society for Vascular Surgery, the other issue that needs to be addressed with the HRQ measure is the risk adjustment model. And I must say all we have is a brief sort of summary of some of the elements that go into that model. But I must say that the model, as it's appears, has really no face validity. For example, the odds ratio or the coefficient associated with rupture is 1.8, which would be much less than any published data regarding the effect of rupture versus elective aneurysm repair, which should be a factor of 5 to 10-fold. The other thing that's interesting is almost all published data would suggest that female gender increases risk, and in this model it suggested that it decreases risk with a coefficient of 0.4, I think. So, I mean, there's a lot of And then when you start breaking it down into smaller groups, which may be part of the problem, but I would submit that there is a lot of work that would need to be done.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you. We're asking for ARC to revise this and bring it back to us. Right now, the committee will ask questions of the SES about your measures, and we'll ask questions of ARC about their measures, and we'll certainly welcome your comments during the public comment section, but we do have a very limited amount of time, and probably more than
I appreciate that. And the only reason I'm making those is because I think it's important as we talk about harmonization.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And this is Dr. Romano. We can clarify the risk adjustment model as well. I believe that the questioner is referring to coefficients rather than odds ratios. So those would have to be exponentiated e to the power 1.8 to get an odds ratio.
All right. Let's keep this in mind for when we discuss this again, when it comes back to us for discussion.
Right. So are you ready to move on to 1523?
We are.
Sounds good.
And this is
okay.
In hospital mortality following elective open repair of small AAAs. And the questions and response are on page 53 in the electronic version, and you will notice that the voting on meeting the criteria for endorsement were 9 yeses and 11 noes, which was very close, and the committee had a number of questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I speak as a vascular surgeon. I think that this performance measure would actually be important, because if you're operating on small aneurysms, you should be making sure that your mortality is low, because the criteria for operating on aneurysms for size alone is very clear. There are reasons to operate on smaller aneurysms, but you have to have done a risk assessment of your patients prior to doing small aneurysms. Because the risk of rupture is small. That's small enough that your risk of surgery has to be less than that. So I think it's an important measure, and then the committee has to decide whether they feel the other questions were answered.
Hey, this is Tim again, Tim Kreswick. Just to point out that part of the other, as Vivian has stressed, is that this type of measure, by focusing on the patients who have low risk of rupture and thus potentially less benefit with surgery, it actually also acts as an overutilization focused measure, which is very important. That's why we think this has tremendous potential by focusing not only on outcome, but also potentially on reducing unnecessary procedures, because the biggest issue would be that anyone doing a preventative operation, a prophylactic operation on a patient at low risk for rupture who is at high risk for surgery or has a shortened life expectancy, that is a very important problem in this country right now, and that's one reason why we think this should go forward. And in fact, you would not want to give credit through risk adjustment for operating on these patients who had extensive comorbidities.
That's a good point. Are there, Vivian, any other issues that you came across, or does anybody else have any comments?
I don't particularly have a lot of issues. There were some issues, I think, that were raised by the committee with the use of the SVS registry, but it's really not that difficult to extract the data. And in fact, I think even if hospitals were to have to collect, I think the question was the coding of the aneurysm size and how to get that information easily to be used outside of the SVS registry. And I think that is not that hard to do. Most surgeons will document the size.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be an easy addition to a admission chart for an aneurysm, mm-hmm. if the performance measure was felt to go forward.
Okay.
Yeah, my recollection of the discussion was there was also concern. The idea was that this could ultimately be done from administrative data set if the CPT-2 codes came into play that would separate small aneurysms from the rest. But then one of the members of the committee, I recall, expressed how incomplete and inadequate clinical documentation using CPT-2 codes had been. So it didn't seem like there was a lot of optimism for that solution. So this really is a for the foreseeable future, I guess, a registry measure.
I guess this is Tim Creswick. I take issue with the. I think we're confusing two things, which is CPT administrative claims data and CPT-2 coding. I don't think there has been anything that has suggested that the CPT-2 coding, which is used just for quality purposes, is inaccurate.
I think that the issue was raised in the committee. I may be mistaken, but I think the issue was raised as to how assiduously people pursue that.
I think they can be changed, said of any claims data. You know, God knows when you review your discharges, a lot of the codes that are on there are not always the most accurate.
There may be one other issue, which is the idea of how widespread CPT-2 coding is right now, and that is certainly an issue. The thing I would point out about this measure is that down the road, if you made a decision that if a CPT-2 code wasn't reported, that you assumed that the patient fell into the category, there would be an extremely strong incentive for physicians to report this code in the patients who would be excluded from the denominator. Otherwise, everybody would fall into the denominator. So I think there is a built-in, if you will, incentive that doesn't require a pay-for-reporting kind of program to do once you've appropriately got the codes available and it's had an appropriate pilot period. So that is one of the things about this approach of identifying low-risk patients that you could easily make this a very strong incentive to have people report.
That sounds like a great point to me.
Okay. Any objections to moving forward then on this?
Sounds good to me.
I concur.
Let's go ahead and move forward then. We really are running out of time here.
Okay. Page 55 of 597 is measure 1534.
It's essentially the same. It's essentially the same discussion about endovascular aneurysms.
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know how much we have to talk about it because it's essentially the same points.
Next.
Good.
Okay. So 1540.
It's not death.
Post-op stroke or death after carotid endarterectomy.
Again, it's
page 56.
It's similar discussions this time about carotids for asymptomatic carotids, and again, the same points apply of overutilization and doing a prophylactic procedure. That you have to, since you have to live 5 years to benefit from a prophylactic carotid endarterectomy, you better make sure that your patient is actually going to benefit. And there is definitely evidence of overutilization. So I think, again, the same points apply to both this and the stenting, the next two measures as well.
Okay. And then there was something that Helen brought up a little bit more often in our in-person meeting was the plan for public reporting. And it looks like that is somewhat addressed in item 3. Will she PQRS data in the near future? Okay. To publish these measures on their website.
This is Tim Creswick again. The issue with public reporting is that we definitely feel that these measures are being proposed as public reporting measures once you had the availability of the CPT-2 codes to properly segregate this denominator. So that is, they're definitely on trial. I think part of the issue may relate to the registry issue, which is sort of a separate issue.
Right, a separate issue that we need to address as a that we need to.
That keeps coming up with multiple things.
Keeps coming up. That somebody somewhere needs to address. All right.
The question: what percentage of vascular surgery is contributed to the SVS registry?
This is Jack Cronowitz. It's in a huge launch phase right now. That is, we've gone from. The SVS launched this initiative outside New England in February. We've gone from having 25 hospitals in New England to now almost 100 hospitals in 30 states, and it's growing exponentially. It is becoming the de facto national vascular registry.
Okay, so Arnard, are you ready to go to 1543 on page 58?
Yes, this sounds just like in our previous with the AAAs. It sounds like it's very analogous.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes, it's the same thing for stenting.
Any discussion?
This is Jack Cronowitz. I just wanted to make the point that one of the questions or suggestions from the committee was to involve other stakeholders who perform carotid stenting in this measure, and we thought that this measure is parallel to the carotid endarterectomy measure. It uses the endpoints that have been used in all the randomized trials, and like it was said for the previous measure, there are so many the huge majority of carotid stents are being performed in asymptomatic patients, you know, that are involved in all sort of various industry-sponsored registries that allow institutions to obtain payment for these, even though they haven't been heretofore covered by CMS. There's a suggestion of huge overuse in this category, and this is another measure that's designed to look at overuse by focusing on the asymptomatic patient. And we think it's really important that, especially for vascular surgeons who perform both of these procedures, to have a measure to report on their asymptomatic patients, whether they choose to treat them with surgery or with stenting, and not just to have a measure that's applicable to surgery.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
I just lost the call there for a second.
Okay. So, where are we with that, with involving other specialties, in particularly in stenting? About, do we know what proportion of radiologists and cardiologists perform stenting procedures on the carotid?
There's a fair number of cardiologists who do.
Or what proportion of carotids that are stented are done by non-surgeons?
I would guess it's a significant portion, if not the majority.
Yeah.
This is Ken Rosenfield. I'm listening in. I'm a cardiologist and vascular medicine person, and Torch is right. It's a substantial majority, but it's important to get to be harmonized in some way.
Okay.
I think there's only one other carotid measure that we've been made aware of that is not exactly the same. I don't know if we're going to be talking about it. It was talked about in phase two. It was from the American Heart Foundation that was looking at follow-up neurologic exams.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But I haven't seen other measures such as this come across our way to be harmonized.
Yeah, that measure was the reason that, this is Ken Rosenfield, that was the reason that I've been listening in on this call, and that's from the American College of Cardiology, which has a similar registry to the SVS's registry for carotids, and so that's why I'm on the call. And that, I'm not sure if that measure is going to be discussed.
Well, we discussed it before. I'm not sure if we're discussing it. Actually, I think we're going to run out of time before we would get to it today, even if it was on the agenda.
Right, and it's not...
it's actually the next one. I believe.
Well, let's hear what Ken has to say, given that we just have 5 minutes. It seems like it was a very interesting discussion in Washington on this topic.
Just briefly, thank you for the opportunity. This is a little bit of a unique measure. It's a process measure. We have had a carotid registry up and running for about the same length of time as the SBS, and they're probably about equal in terms of their numbers. We have about 180 hospitals that are participating, and we think that we've noticed that there's a significant gap that exists nationwide in the assessment of neurologic outcome after any carotid revascularization. I think that's what Jack's proposed measure, the SVS proposed measure, also addresses, is the need to standardize and increase the ascertainment for measurement of neurologic outcome, and we would argue independent assessment of neurologic outcome. And so this measure suggests that we, as is consistent with all the contemporary trials and the registries which Dr. Cronenwet mentioned, the sort of standard for carotid stenting has been that you measure outcome at the 30-day plus or minus time frame, and that's what this proposal is to look at not to look at the actual outcome of the measurement, but to say, are you measuring independent neurologic assessment at the 30-day time frame, whether it's plus or minus 14 days or whatever. But after discharge, is somebody looking at the patient and making sure that they're doing okay? And we believe that's a real important way to sort of drive both outcomes. If people know they're going to be their patients are going to be looked at afterwards for outcomes, it's going to reduce overutilization and improve quality.
Can I make a comment? This is Mark Morash from SVS also. SVS has been kind of resistant to this type of measure over the last couple of years because we were concerned that it might place undue burden on the system. But just so Dr. Rosenfeld, we have had some discussions about it, and I think we've come to consensus that we as a group would be certainly happy to support you in the development of that measure.
Well, that's great to hear, and we'd love to work with SVS on this and push forward together. I think the neurology societies, we've actually had discussion with them, and to them it's kind of like mom and apple pie.
Yeah.
But,
well, in order to get NIH stroke scale done, it doesn't necessarily require a neurologist. As you know, and any of us who's taking part in the stent trials knows that certainly ancillary staff can do that. So hopefully not such a burden.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a standardized instrument and people are sort of trained to use it. And then once they're trained, then certified to go out and use it, and it's done in a standard way. I'm trying to remember what the objections to this were. My recollection is they were mostly around the timing of the examination.
Torch, there were three questions that were asked, and one of them had to do with the timing. The question was, could this be done earlier or at the time of discharge, as says the SBS proposed for the asymptomatic group? And I guess our feeling is that we sort of believe that it's the most meaningful and accurate assessment of outcome is really the follow-up outcome. And by the way, when you do endarterectomy or stenting, you're paid you're paid based on the event of care, if you will. So it's not just the procedure itself and the hospitalization, it's the follow-up period. And most people do see their patients in follow-up at 30 days, so it has to be some kind of follow-up in that general time frame.
This is Tim Kreisberg, and I'm commenting strictly from the point of view of a measure, someone has been involved in a lot of these kinds of measures. The problem we have, separate from any other issue, is just how this is reported, because right now with most post-operative codes, there's no additional payment. So in terms of implementation and any kind of CMS program, there's no ability to associate, for example, a CPT-2 coding of this process because there's no separate bill at the file office. And that's just a technical issue that's completely separate from everything else. But that has been the problem with most of these types of measures.
So, Arden, it's Melinda. On 1543, the question seemed to be a future-related question, not so much with respect to this measure, but that going forward, that any measures related be developed in conjunction with other specialties.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the group, if that was the position of the group, and if so, then it is a recommendation going forward as opposed to a recommendation specific to revision of this measure.
I think that that would be appropriate to our discussion, that it's a recommendation going forward. We're really out of time here, and have we come to a conclusion about 1531? We sort of segued into it.
1531, Willie, there are a number of questions that are open about 1531 that have not been discussed. And there is a bit of additional information separately, so I don't think so. So if you want to do a time check to see if people can hold on a bit longer or if we just pick up here in our next call.
I'm afraid I have to leave, so thank you all. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I have to leave also, Arden, so I think it sounds like next time.
Hello.
Is there any chance that we could ask if there's a need?
There's a lot of background.
Could you say that one more time, please?
It's Jeff Silber. We've been waiting for a few hours. Is there any chance that we can be told whether there was a request that we be there? In other words, it might have been that you would have voted that our written responses were adequate and so save us from sitting through another meeting.
Dr. Silber, I'm not certain that the group can say that to you at this very moment, and I appreciate what you're saying about needing to sit through another meeting as this group has been sitting through many, many meetings. I really appreciate that, and we'll do the best we can do, but you would want, as I know the group does, to give fair consideration to each and every one, so that's the best response I can give you right now. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm going to have to go. Melinda, everybody, thank you very much for your time. And I will look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.